This podcast may contain adult language, adult situations, spoilers, and some brief nudity, so parental guidance is adjusted.
We have such sights to show you.
After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're gonna wish you had 10 beers.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Oh, well. La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la, yeah.
Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast.
Hello, everyone out there, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am the Vern. This is our Yahoo for Yargo series, and I brought along with me a wonderful cat who's also Yahoo for Yargos. It's Jim from Film Rage.
Yahoo! For Yargos.
Love it. Love it. So excited to have you back on the show. The last time you were on here, you were joined with Ryan from Soundtrack to Life to discuss about the Talking Heads Stop Making Sense, and that was a hell of a fun time.
Oh man, you on there. Every time I get some my own time with the Burn, I'm on it.
Oh, I love that. It brings me joy to have you here. Can hardly contain it. You know, I see that beard of yours, and I just want to rub my face over it right there. All right,
yeah,
gives me joy.
Yeah, I love your white beard when it's white and beardy. So. See? Num num.
Like the little Santa Claus dashing right there, all right? It's like cocaine. It's like cocaine in my beard, all right?
Oh, yeah. I could totally do cocaine off that beard. No one would even know.
But you saw the description. We are talking about the movie The Favorite. Like I said before, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, starring Emma Stone, Olivia Colman, and Rachel Weisz as our three leads. But before we do that, Jim, we gotta do what we do every episode, and that is Rage Corner.
Rage Corner.
Rage Corner, brought to you by the wonderful gents over at the Film Rage Podcast. Do you have anything you want to rage about, Jim?
You know what my biggest rage is, actually, and it's very fitting that I'm coming on this episode, because as you know, because I know we are podcast tweens together.
Yes.
But you know, we could have Yorgos on as undoubted on our list, because we have a list, and my rage is that he doesn't consider his first movie that he did jointly as part of his universe of films, because otherwise he would be undoubted already. But now we have to wait for another whole movie to come along.
So I know he's got another movie coming out with Emma Stone, but are you talking about his first movie, Darktooth, or was there another one he made before that?
Oh, no, if you dig deep into the Yorgos nether regions, he had his first movie that he made was actually a joint directing called My Best Friend. And it's also almost impossible to find, because I've been trying to find it. It's directed by himself and another dude called Lakis Lazopoulos. And when you ask him, and if you go to his website, he doesn't even have it listed as one of his films. So, yeah, ultimately my rage is twofold. One, I can't get access to this movie. But two on that, on Film Rage, we have a rule. You have to have 8 consecutive films that has no rage or doesn't have a double meh, and then you become undoubted. And he's already 7, but if he counted that first one, he would be undoubted.
He would be undoubted, but he's not quite undoubted yet.
I know, which makes me mad, because he's so freaking awesome. He's like my second favorite director of all time. All time.
That's okay.
You know, I like a lot of directors. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a very big, that's a great rage. I had a hard time thinking about a rage quarter for me, so I'm glad you went there first, because I don't think I have much of a rage thing going on. I know I will think about this later. The only kind of rage I have right now is I want the Oscars to go back to just having 5 nominees. I think we're getting too much with the 10 nominations.
Are you trying to have just 5? Are you trying to generate another rage in me? Because you know my dislike of all things that are award shows.
When did Oscars touch you? All right, I just want to know.
When did Oscars go bad?
Was there a year?
They've always been bad. Let's face it. But you know what? I think the epiphany came to me would it be probably in the 90s. I don't even remember when. But so my big thing, as you know, is the Oscars and all these ones that all kind of come around the same time. First off, they're not really judging it from a pool of all the films that are created, because there's a significant number of films that I've seen last year that, like, we come to, I want to say we do at least almost 300 films in cinemas a year. And so we see a ton of films that come to cinemas. And
you see everything.
Yeah, we try to. But there's a lot of stuff that we get at film festivals. We can't be at every showing. So we miss a lot of stuff. But the stuff that we get at the film festivals are usually the best films that we get to see. And they don't even come to North America once they hit the film festivals. Like, they just hit the circuit. And then if you don't know about this film, you just will never see it. So, for example, my favorite film last year, which you'll never be able to see in cinemas, probably, because it's just probably won't get released, is called 20,000 Species of Bees. And so the fact that that wasn't even nominated for anything, it proves to me that it's a very filtered award show. They're all filtered to put more money into Hollywood, as opposed to actually judging what is the actual best movie in the world.
If your movie has the money, it will get nominated.
That's exactly it. Yep. And you know, okay. So that's where my distaste of the award shows is, because it's really, first off, the Oscars is the worst of all of them, because the people don't even have to watch the movie to be able to vote. So how ethical is that? Let alone how accurate is it? It's like all the people that are sitting in the Academy, they're like, whatever, yeah, I kind of like George Clooney, let's nominate him for Boys in the Boat. You know what I mean? Like, they don't even have to watch it. It's not a prerequisite for them to see the movie. And then they're judging whether or not it's the best of anything is enough to make anybody lose their mind. Like, so yeah, do I like to see a lot of beautiful people sitting around talking to funny people? Yeah, that's okay. But as far as the awards, I don't count them as counting for anything at all.
I can respect that. I can respect and honor that, because there were a lot of movies I saw at film festivals that will never see the light of day, and they'll never be mentioned at award shows, even though they probably weren't very good. So you made a very good point about that. And I like the fact that there's a whole bunch of different awards right there. You got SAG, you got Golden Globes, you got the Independent Spirit Awards, and each movie just wins and nominated. And I like the fact that maybe there's a movie that people haven't heard of before, because these are mostly for general audiences. And if general audiences get, you know, leader notions to see Poor Things, then I'm happy that they get a chance to see it, because people should go watch Poor Things. Good movie. So the Oscars helps out with that. All for that right now. We are going to lead right now into our conversation about The Favorite. But before I do that, I'm going to take a quick little break right now to do an ad spot from a wonderful podcast show that you should definitely check out. And then I'll be right back. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Welcome to the podcast that wouldn't die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
What up, what up?
Each week, we'll explore the classics of the horror and sci-fi genre with a little comedic twist.
We will ask those important questions like, why don't they get out of the haunted house the first time they see the ghost or the demon?
Why do people feel like, hey, there's been a spooky disappearance, but I'm going to investigate myself, even though I have no investigative background?
Or why didn't I realize I was dead the whole time?
These important questions and many others we will get to the bottom of. So check us out each week at the podcast that wouldn't die.
Be there or be square.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cinema Recall Podcast, doing our Yahoo for Yorgos series. You can follow Cinema Recall on a whole plethora of podcast platforms out there, including Spotify and Podchaser, Good Pods, Apple Podcasts. We're also available on Newsly. Newsly is an all-in-one audio app for iOS and Android phone. It picks up the most trending articles on the web and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable. Stop scrolling. Start listening, go to newsly.me, use the promo code RECALL, and get 1 month free of their premium service. Before we do get into the favorite, Jim, since you are first on, well, not first one, but you are now on our Yahoo for Yorgos series, tell me, what was your first movie you saw of Yorgos Lanthimos, and what is your favorite movie? Not counting the favorites, which we're going to talk about.
Jesus. Sheesh. Probably Dogtooth. Yeah, I saw it at a festival, and then I was like, I can't wait to see his next film. And that, but was funny about it because I just literally within the last month saw Kineta. So that was the first time Bryce and I both got to see that. So if you haven't seen it, it is also pretty awesome.
I have not seen that. I'm excited to. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's fairly available, and I think maybe because it's fairly available because of, you know, his nomination and also his and Olivia Colman's previous win, right? Like, he's now got momentum, so people will get to know him and see him and love him like we do.
Yeah, and by all means, please check out our episode on Dogtooth that we did with Bo from Collateral Cinema and Keely from Once Over with Keely. That's over on our website, cinemarecall.net. The Favorite is what we're talking about, and here is a small little trailer of The Favorite.
Dearest Queen,
how goes the kingdom?
They were all staring, weren't they? And I heard the word fat, fat.
The Favorite is a crowning achievement.
You have become close to Abigail.
You're jealous.
Led by three fantastic actresses at the height of their powers.
I'm on my side. Always.
You are enjoying all of this, aren't you?
Oh, it is fun to be queen sometimes.
It's a perfectly cut diamond of a movie.
I love a comedy. Is there cake?
The Favorite, rated R.
The Favorite, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, tells the story. In the early 18th century, England is at war with the French. Nevertheless, Dark Racine and Panablatin are thriving. A frail Queen Anne occupies the throne, and her close friend, Lady Sarah, governs the country in her shred while tending to Anne's ill health and material temper. When a new servant, Abigail, arrives, her charm endears her to Sarah. Sarah takes Abigail under her wing, and Abigail sees a chance to return to aristocratic roots. Am I saying that right? Yeah, aristocratic roots. That's the best way that I'm describing this from our wonderful Google film stars, Emma Stone, Lily Collins, and Rachel Weisz. And I remember seeing this in theaters because I was a big fan of The Lobster and Killing of a Sacred Deer. And this one had a much more broad comedy aspect to it, even from the opening trailers of this. Do you remember the first time you saw this movie at all, Jim?
Yeah, it was also in theaters too. And yeah, I just wait for his next movie to come out. Like, I just kind of hold my breath until that happens. So I'm going to be holding it not as long, because there was a huge gap between Poor Things and The Favorite. Like, I know he made a couple of shorts, but like he needs to continue to put more stuff out, because every movie he makes is so creative and visually a masterpiece, in my opinion. So yeah, I saw it in cinemas when it came out. Like, I tried to for everything, and it's in my top of his films that he's put out too, because surprisingly, like, for the most part, I hate biopics and I hate period pieces because they're usually boring, stuffy, and everything that I'm not. And when I saw this the first time, I went, holy crap, this is hilarious. Like, I just couldn't stop laughing in some of the scenes. That it's so subtly, softly quiet. But, you know, when you know his style, that's exactly his style. He wants you to laugh at stuff, but not like extremely overboard and out loud in front of everybody.
And I was wrong. I said Lily Coleman. It's Olivia Coleman. So I apologize. I was so wrong, but Lily Coleman, she plays Snow White in the movie. That's not the same person, but they both had a deal with like royalty princesses. No, Olivia Coleman, she plays the role of Queen Anne, and Rachel Weisz is her lover, her best friend, her confidant, you would say, in a way. Just pulling up this right now. Yeah, Olivia Coleman, Queen Anne. Which ways is Lady Sarah. I had no idea these were based on actual real people. And knowing that it is, it just makes the film that much more funnier. It's a very dark story. This was written by Deborah Davis and Tony McNamara. Yargos will team up with Tony in the Poor Things later on. And I do believe those two were part of a show on Hulu with what's her face, Elle Fanning and Nicholas Holt.
Oh wow.
They were part of a show that it was something called, like, it's on the tip of my tongue right now, and I will know what that is by the end of this episode. But if you're a fan of The Favorite,
he's an actor, or the show, are you saying Yorgos was in a show with
No, the writers of this movie, The Favorite.
Okay.
They were involved in this TV series with Elle Fanning. In fact, I'm going to look them up right now. They're great.
Oh, that's the show. Yeah.
Which has a Nicholas Holt from this movie and Elle Fanning. And if you're a big fan of that type of comedy stylings or the way the movie is written, I do recommend. They're great. Although I never got a chance to finish it, I should go back and do so, because it was actually a lot of fun. Now, in The Favorite, you get the beginning relationships with Queen Anne and Lady Sarah, and I do like their dynamics together, because Lady Sarah still wants to keep the war going, and Queen Anne doesn't want to know what's going on. And when Abigail Emma Stone's character comes in, you first of all see Lady Sarah as being the bad guy of her trying to get in the way of things and her trying to start the war, keep going. She has her whole enemy going on with Nicholas Holt's character. And I like the fact that you see characters in one way, but as the film progresses, they change and you get to see other sides of them, where people who were bad are not as bad as you thought, and people who were good are not as good as they thought. And I thought all actors just play the roles brilliantly.
Yeah, totally. The you know, that's one of the things, just with what Yorgos does really well, is he develops characters so deep and rich that you really get to feel that character through the entire film. And like you say, the transition of those characters is huge in this, like, just huge. And it's funny, because I know you kind of say the good and the bad and the ugly, but it seems like it's just kind of, I didn't sort of feel that as much, to say, okay, like, they didn't really actually have a heroine in it. And yet there's three main leads. Because to your point, it's like by the time we get to the end, you kind of just feel sorry for all of them.
Yes.
At the end of it, right? Because, you know, you're watching it and you're kind of going like, oh, wow, Emma Stone had a tough life. And then you find out, oh, well, you know what, Rachel Weisz's character also had a tough life. And then you see the queen herself, who's, you know, she's not even really interested in being the queen, at least from the perception of the story. And she is, like, to your point also, she's kind of clued out. But, you know, you can tell she has vision loss and she won't wear glasses. And she has a bunch of hangups. And, you know, she's had a hard life too. Lost 17 kids. Like, that's a lot of kids to lose, right? So they all came from this place of pain and suffering, and then they all get together, and they could have probably found a way to work it out, but there was the power struggle between the two that were quote unquote the favorites, right?
Yeah, because both Lady Sarah and Abigail, they're both trying to become the queen's favorite, and at the first of the story, we are introduced to Abigail. She's a person that came from, you know, a good stature life, but she kind of fell down and her ranking in the sort of whole, like, political and other words I'm not thinking of right now. Her class stature just kind of went downhill a little bit there. She gets a job basically through Lady Sarah, who I believe is her cousin, and she's able to work for the queen. She's ridiculed by the other servants. She gets tricked into putting her hands in lye and burning them. And then she discovers if she puts some, like, oak or the different types of tree sap, it'll bring their itching down. And then she uses that on the queens because she has a bad case of the gout. And she uses that to appease the queen. And then those two become friends. And while watching the first time, you really think, hey, you want her to succeed. You want Emma Stone's character to succeed because she's this good person. She just wants to get back on track. And then rewatching it this time, you start to see she doesn't care about the queen at all. She just wants to get power back. And then you get to see Lady Sarah, Rachel Weisz's character. She has a lot more love. And there's that great sequence in the beginning of the movie where their queen is about to give a presentation and she stops her and she's like, you look like a badger, all right? And I will be honest with you all the time, all right? Love means being honest. Or even before that too, where Anne's asking her to take care of one of the rabbits and she's like, I will not do that. And Anne's like, I thought you'd love me. I was like, love has its limits, all right? And that's my limit. And, but she also says too that I will always be honest with you because that's what love is. When I will tell you, you look like a badger. When you look like a badger, I'm not going to placate your ego because that's what love is. If I really love someone, I'm going to be honest with them all the way. And I just fucking love that shit.
Yeah. The dialogue in this is so well crafted, right? It's so cleverly written, and at the same time, to your point, the repartee between Olivia Colman and Rachel Weisz's characters is so deep, right? Because they've been together for a long time, right?
Yeah.
So, and that Olivia Colman really relies on Lady Sarah, like the queen relies on Lady Sarah because she is not just her confidant, best friend, lover, all these things. She's also the head of state under her, right? You know, they have, it's still the government in Britain, right? But at the same time, you know, through that, she is the spokesperson for the queen. The queen doesn't even show up to a lot of things of state. And so it, you know, I might debate you. Like, I think that they did develop a love, but I think that love took time to grow because there's also things that Lady Sarah's character kind of says when she's having conversations with Emma Stone about, you know, what you have to do to get by. Because, I mean, Lady Sayer's character is also married to a dude. So I didn't get the opinion that she was bisexual. I got the opinion that she was, you know, just basically pleasing the queen to please her, right? And to stay her favorite. So you could kind of feel by the end that I think the love was kind of real between them. But at the same time, it's really hard to judge that, right? It's like when relationships start at work, when you have a boss that is, you know, starts having sex with their actual employee. It's like, is it? Oh, it's never really on equal footing. So you don't really know the level of the love that could be, because she's still the queen. And at the end of the day, when she says off with her head, like it can happen, right? So, and which it does. It's basically like, get the fuck out of my country. Like, you piss me off, yeah. Get the fuck out. Right?
That's the ultimate breakup right there. I mean, off with her head. I mean, shit. You better be, all right, Lady Sarah better be good at giving head so she doesn't get her head cut off. So
doesn't lose saying. Her head. That's right. Yeah, she better give it so she don't lose it.
Exactly. No.
And apparently in the movie, Abigail's fellatio is much better than Lady Sarah's.
Yeah. That.
Yeah.
Oh. And but then again, you kind of realize from Abigail's past that she probably had to do a lot of that. Now, I don't know if I got the actress' right name right there, but I think one of the first Barons character played by Joe Alwyn, she's in the room. She finally gets status up to have her own room. And then a guy comes into her room and he's like, you know what? I find you very attractive, and you know, I'm gonna say, she goes like, are you gonna rape me? Are you gonna try every way with me? And she's like, no, I'm a gentleman. And she's like, okay, rape then.
And then she just falls back.
But I find that the way that these characters all conspire kind of against each other are in a ways conspires then against themselves in a way too. Like Emma Stone's character of Abigail, she, like I said before, she's a person that feels very strong-willed, but also the display her as being the tragic victim. Even the point where they're shooting live birds in the air, and Sarah is trying to get the one up on Abigail by trying to say that she's the one that has the power, and the way that Yorgos shoots sequences, you think that she's going to become like the victim, and then it progresses. She starts to get more power to the point where she's no longer the innocent victim anymore. And she starts to have more powerful things, and she's able to get Lady Sarah kind of kicked off the court, and she's able to, you know, be traded into this other place. But like you said before, the dialogue is very, very sweet and awesome. Yeah, I see the words too much right there. But yeah, I just found it to be just, there's too much to say. And like, I wish I could bring up some of the quotes because they are just freaking awesome right now. It's got this dark way of talking. My mind's becoming a blank right now because I just let people know this. I saw like too many new movies out in theaters this week. And so my mind is on different things right now. I just recorded an episode not too long ago on JFK, so I'm finished up that episode and then trying to think about stuff to say about The Favorite. But yeah, got anything you want to mention about The Favorite real quickly here, Jim?
Yeah, you know, to your point, especially when you're talking about the part where they're actually doing the shooting of the birds, because I think the transfer of power happens when Emma Stone's character is now an exceptional shot, and when he throws the bird up, she intentionally shoots the bird quickly so that the blood splatters onto Lady Sarah's face.
Yes,
that's the moment that it kind of has that transition from, okay, now I am the master, I have the power. And to me, that, like, he does that in a lot of his films where there's a moment in the film you go, okay, This is it. This is the moment here. And it's subtle a lot of times, but that was the moment for me where it's kind of like, okay, like, you, Emma Stone's character is going to destroy here. You could just know it. Like, you knew that Rachel's Weisz's character, Lady Sarah, was a super powerful person within the monarchy, but she didn't have the hunger that Emma Stone's character did at that point, right? Like, I think that also comes from being, you know, it's kind of like that when you start a job, right? And you've been in the job for like 20 years or whatever. I mean, You probably had a job for a long period of time. I've had jobs for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And then the new guy comes in and you're kind of thinking like pish posh, you know, like, you know, I'm not afraid of you. I'm still the man. I'm the man.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden you realize, holy shit, this person's doing twice my numbers. This person's like actually going for lunches with my boss, which I used to do. Like, you can see it. You can feel that as you're watching the film and as it starts to unfold.
This happened to me. I used to work for Sam Goody, and I was one of their managers in training, waiting to get like the top spot at a store. And then this new lady just hired, and she starts closing up to the boss because she's attractive. She's beautiful. So she starts to become more chummy with the boss and starts to flirt heavily with him. And now suddenly she gets a position over me. And I'm like, I can't compete with this, especially because you're flirting heavily with a boss and they have gone out on dates together. I know they slept together. And so I'm going to say that she got the job promotion over me because I'm not an attractive female. So,
well, you know, if you were Emma Stone, you would just have to be able to suck dick better than she did. And then you might have got the job.
I might have gotten the job there, so
it's what you're willing to do for that job, Vern. It's always what you're willing to do, right? Like, even in Emma Stone's character with the boy she's dating, right? Like, because of you see how she operates, I have no confidence that she actually loves that person. I mean,
when she gets rid of that guy, she's just furiously masturbating him under the sheets right there.
Yeah, she's talking about how she's going to destroy Lady Sarah the same time it's her wedding night, I think, and she's giving her husband a hand job instead of having sex with him. Like, you kind of know, like, she every move she made was so calculated, and she's always thinking about the next move, whereas Rachel Weisz had the job and she's just trying to make sure that things move forward progressively, right? Like, the favorite is that same point to your point of, you know, she came in, she says, I'm going to be the favorite. You were like, oh, thinking you had the confidence, I am the favorite. But you know what? Mm-hmm. It's whatever you're willing to do. If you're willing to do whatever it takes, and, you know, you watch shows like RuPaul's Drag Race, or, you know, when the Justin Cheeto had his show and you're fired or whatever that show was, The Apprentice, right? Like, it's whatever you're willing to do to get that job. You got to do it. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to get that job.
You got the confidence too, and I like the scene where she's talking with her husband while firstly jacking him off, and he starts to talk. He's like, I know this seems weird, this seems cruel and dark, and I'm sorry about this, but please shut up. I'm thinking right now. Go away. You know, she always has stuff happen in her head. And I knew right when she came into the castle and she's being interviewed by Lady Sarah. And she goes, I apologize about the flies with me. I just fell in some shit. I just spent hours in a carriage watching another guy fully just masturbate. And Rachel Weisz says, you know, Abigail says, you know, maybe I could be something for the kids. And Lady Sarah goes, what, for something to scare them? So she always has, I think, right from the start, she just was starting to really manipulate things. But what I love about this movie is that the first time you watch it, I always saw Abigail to be like the hero, like our audience avatar. And we were kind of seeing things from her eyes. We want her to achieve greatness because she seems like a person that was really nice and sweet. And she wants just to get back on the, what do you call it? She wants to get her status back again. She doesn't want to be poor. She doesn't want to be sleeping on the floor with other servants. She wants her status back. And Rachel Weisz's character is this evil person. She just wants to keep the war going on and on. At first, when you watch this, you think that she is manipulating Queen Anne because Queen Anne has lost a lot of kids. Her mind is not there. There are moments where she'll be like watching a concert outside and be happy about it. And then a split second, she'll turn and be like, move, leave, stop that music, go away. Or that one funny sequence where after she's been told that she looks like a raccoon, she goes to that little servant at the door and she's like, were you looking at me? Look at me. Look at me. How dare you? Don't look at me.
That scene is probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie. That, like, again, not going to say I deserve that Olivia Colman deserves an Oscar, but she is one of the best actors working today. Like there is, we talked earlier about our lists and mesmerizing. Olivia Colman is on our lists, and we put Emma Stone on the mesmerizing list because of Poor Things. And then we went back and rewatched The Favorite, and Olivia Colman in mine and my partner Bryce's humble perception is that Olivia Colman, this is at the top of her game. Like this,
that's true.
She had so much range in this film. And you know, Rachel Weisz as like, I can't say I'm a huge fan of Rachel Weisz. I mean, there's films in her that I think, yeah, she was the right person in that role. But in this character, no one could have played that role better. She was absolutely fan-freaking-tastic.
See, a favorite Rachel Weisz movie of mine, and I know it's a movie that you did not like because I know I recommended it to Film Rage, was The Shape of Things. I loved her performance in that movie. She was like, she was almost like a slasher villain in an 80s slasher film, but she didn't use a knife. She used words. She manipulated things and she cut people down, and loved her in The Shape of Things. And The Favorite, she's still playing that kind of like conniving person, but she's not conniving. She actually is trying to make things better. You think that because she wants to keep the war going, that she's, you know, doesn't want to keep peace, but she just wants to try to protect her citizens, and she doesn't want her kingdom to be taken over. And I thought she was really trying to look out for the queen as well. And I think she had much more of a relationship. And I can see it too. You know, you're talking about the guy that takes over the job that's just a little bit better, even though they're not better. Like, Abigail doesn't really love the queen. She just wants to do whatever it takes to get her status back. So if she has to sleep with this guy or go down with this person here, like the sequence where she's rolling Queen Anne down the hallway and she goes, if I was a man, I would ravage you right now. And maybe Queen Anne at the time, she wasn't feeling as loved. She was not hearing the things that she wants to hear. And sometimes in a relationship, if you're not telling the person that they want to hear something they want to hear, they'll get that from other people, even though the other person may not mean what they really say. It's just stuff that they want to hear. Each lead in this does an incredible job. And like I said before, I just like the way that it twists and turns your perceptions. And that's my favorite thing when movies do that, is they'll take a character and you think you know them, and then he'll twist it on you, and then Yardos will go ahead and twist it back another way on you too. And it's just really great.
He just weaves the story and the characters to deeper levels. He just does it with all of his characters though. Like that's one of the big drivers for me, and the directors that I really love are the ones that can really develop characters to a significant level. And he's a master of it, right? So, and he does that in all his films.
He does, I agree, Jim. He does all his features there. I want to talk real briefly about the historical accuracy, and I'm getting this from Wikipedia, so bear with me. Lanthimos said, some of the things in the film are accurate and a lot aren't. Joel Alwyn said there was little concern for historical research of characters' background, saying, I think people turn up to the rehearsal period thinking maybe they should read their history books and thought about their characters and their intentions and all that stuff that you normally think about. But Yargos made it clearly early on that there wasn't going to be much consideration for historical accuracy to a degree. He wasn't too caught up with or concerned about that. He just wanted us to have fun as people, as a cast, and explore the relationships between us, which is what we did. And you can definitely see that. And I don't really need to know so much about if this was true or not. It's one of those stories where the fiction may not be more truer, but it's a lot more fun. And I'm sure I'd be interested to read more about Queen Anne. I'm sure Queen Anne did have 17 kids that she lost. I don't know if there was this whole like double cross or bad cross between these three women. And you realize that these women, and we didn't mention this before, these women are smarter than any of the male characters
this
movie.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
If these three would get together and put their minds at it, they could run this kingdom.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's what I was saying, is that if they hadn't come out being who they were from the beginning and actually being vulnerable and worked through it, they could have easily worked all together, right? But, you know, to your point, that wouldn't have made it as good a movie. Like, I did do a bit more digging into this, that, you know, that it did kind of happen the way that it did in the movie, in the sense that Abigail kind of took over as the favorite. But my understanding was, you know, things like the rabbits weren't real and some of the little small details like that. So there is a lot of historical accuracy that went with it based on the story and the three ladies that are in it. But yeah, all the nuances, like, I don't think this was a comedy in real life, right? And that's, no. You know, so the fact that he spreads his comedy, you know, veins into this film just makes it more enjoyable to watch. Because, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on, you know, period piece biopics, but for me, they're like painful to watch. They're just painful to watch. And I love dramas. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm always up for a good drama over actually any genre. But when it comes to period pieces and biopics, I'm kind of like, just make it enjoyable. Like, they're so painful to begin with. So, like, if you've got humor in it, I'm much more dialed into it. Right? Like History of the World Part 2. Still a classic movie. Can't. It's good to be the king. I kind of wish Olivia Colman would have said that. It's good to be the queen. Would have made me laugh.
Oh, that would be great. Oh, she would have said from the History of the World Part 1. Yes. For me, Jim, there are only like three sort of like historical period piece movies that I will watch again and again. The first one is this one, The Favorite. I mean, that. Like, well, I'm not putting this in special orders here, but it's The Favorite, Marie Antoinette, and Barry Lyndon.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Those are probably the three that I know I will go to again and again. I'm still waiting for a 4K release of Marie Antoinette, because I think that movie is gorgeous to look at, and I love Sofia Coppola's movies.
Yeah, it's pretty visually cool. And have you been to Paris at all?
I have not. I've not been to the castle.
Versailles.
The
shop, yeah, there. It's
Versailles. Yeah,
it's so cool. Yeah, you would love it, buddy. Especially if you really like them visuals. And this one had a real Middle Ages feel to it. Everything was dark and smelly and filthy, and you know. That was another piece that just made me laugh for like 5 minutes, when Nicholas Holt's character is trying to squeeze some stuff out of Emma Stone, and she kind of says, "Well, I can't really turn him," and he just pushes her into the shit.
Yes.
he pops up on her a couple times in the castle, and she's like, "Yeah, you're always throwing me off my feet." It's just. Every little scene like that, because the nuances, once you develop those threads of the characters, it helps you to go through the entire movie and just be like, okay, that was funny. And you now have feelings for the character, be it like or dislike, right? It just draws you into the characters deeper.
That's true. Very true. I do want to read some quotes, because I know I said quotes earlier, but I'm a horrible person of trying to read verbatim of what they say in the movies. So I'm like, all right, so the clip I had earlier with Abigail and the other guy who was going to seduce her. Abigail, have you come to seduce me or rape me? Gentlemen, I am a gentleman. Abigail, so rape then. And then
she falls back in this funny little look, like, oh, take, go ahead.
I want to hear this one thing. Lady Sarah, Mrs. Maid, Your cream bill is outrageous. Are you bathing it to help your hemorrhoids? Okay. Lady Sarah, you did not lisp, but you are mad. Give me a palace. Queen Anne, I've been wanting to give you something for quite some time now. Seemed like the perfect opportunity with Marlborough winning. Lady Sarah, it is a monstrous extravagance, Mrs. Morley. We are at war. Queen Anne, we won. Lady Sarah, oh, it's not over. We must continue. The Queen Anne, oh, I did not know that. There's one thing that, and I, there's just so much other, it has like this dry delivery that only Yardos Lanthimos can do. And if you watched The Killing of a Sacred Deer and Dogtooth, that type of dry delivery, but with Tony McNamara's words, it just elevates it to a much more degree that I cannot recommend. Like, I think a lot of elements in The Killing of a Sacred Deer and Dogtooth are very funny. It's just the delivery of how it's done. And I don't know if that has to do with like the screen rating and the combination of the Dretton, because I know both Killing of a Sacred Deer and Dogtooth were written by other people with Yorgos Lanthimos' words. And I think both The Favorite and now Poor Things, it just got this rhythm of dialogue that it just feels almost like operatic and almost like it's a play acting. It's not so much it's not a realistic version of how dialogue is done. And yes, me reading the quotes, I am not performing this well because I am not an actor. All right. I'm a podcaster. I review movies badly. But I just like the way that the dialogue is done in this. It's almost, I could see this being done as a play. And
yeah, totally. It could easily be a play. If it hasn't been adapted to a play, it could easily be a play. Because there's really not a lot of locations either, right? Like, there's a few scenes out in the woods, very minimal. They're in the castle. They're in another room in the castle. You're right. It's easily could be a play. And it's not, that's not part of what's telling the story. The cinematography is not really what's making this film. It's 100%, to your point, the dialogue and the character development. Because the dialogue is quick-witted, it's quick thinking, and you almost, to your point about rewatching it a second time, I think because it's so quick and smart that watching it a second time will help you get to see and feel all the dialogue properly.
Good point there. One of my favorite quotes of this, and I found this, Abigail says to Lady Sarah, "Can I ask you something?" And Lady Sarah goes, "As long as you're aware that I have a gun." Which I think that should be something that all women should say to anything a guy has to ask them. Like, I think if you approach a lady at a bar and she goes, "Hey, can I ask you something?" And she should go, just so you know, I have a gun.
Yeah, that's right. Oh. And if they're in Texas, that would not be a lie. It'd just that be, you know. That's right. Because the stars at night are big and bright. Dude, I like totally set you up for that. Oh.
Deep in the heart of Texas. I don't know why my mind blanked.
Yeah, your mind is still asleep, buddy.
I did not get a chance to watch this recently. I watched like a few weeks ago, and I kind of lost my notes on there because I know this time, like I said before, watching it this time, you really see Abigail as being the villain of this piece, but she's not really the villain. She's just very determined. Is that a villain thing for her? I don't know. Is Lady Sarah the villain because of the way that she treats Abigail at first? But maybe she has a right to treat her that way. These are very complex women, and I like stories like that where it's very complex. You're not quite sure, but this is an extremely funny movie. It has a lot of like dry wit, like dry British humor wit, which I freaking love. Another historical piece, and I'll put this in the gym. I did not mention this earlier. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'll put that as a period piece movie.
Sure, I'll take that. I'll take that. That would be in my for sure top 10.
Yeah.
But interesting, I think what Yorgos does as well as his character and his character development, his writing, is he has this innate ability for us to look inside ourselves. And in this one, it's pointed very much at the aristocracy and on political satire, because, you know, you have things like the British Parliament, where they're going to have a duck race, right? Like stuff like that. It's like, really? They're going to be having a duck race in Parliament? Or, you know, she goes inside, I'm going to get some lobsters so we can race them and then eat them, right? It's like the little things like that, that it is really pointing fun at the same time as you're looking at it and going, okay, so this is what real politics is like. It's like Game of Thrones. It really is that for people when you get into that power politics movement, it really is kind of what it's like, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't kind of see that too. I don't know so much about the political aspirations of the accuracy of the movie. An image came to my mind about this movie, Jim, and that is the rabbits. We are talking about historical accuracies. The rabbits came to mind for me because Queen Anne's taking care of all these rabbits, and there's a moment where Abigail wants to put her foot on a rabbit to try and squish it, to control it. And then the very end scene is all these rabbits that show up in the frame before it goes. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, so this is just multiplying. This whole story is something that just goes on and on, where people will kind of do whatever they want to say or lie to each other just to get higher. And
it's like the underpinning or the undertone of it, that, you know what, the rabbits represent just that society, and it's going to continue to do what it's going to do.
It's going to keep multiplying. And you can even take that to our own sort of like political aspirations as well, or people just kind of lie and say whatever they want to become higher people. And yeah, I find to be.
See, I wondered, because, you know, I know you still go back and watch a lot of old films, but it kind of had me, as I was watching it, and some of the scenes and the way they were shot, it really reminded me of Woody Allen's Everything You Want to Know About Sex But Afraid to Ask with the rabbits.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because you've seen that movie, right?
I have. It's been a while since I've seen it. It's a movie that's spread up to different shorts. So for listeners out there, it's a movie that's kind of spread out into different vignettes and shorts about, you know, the Everything You Want to Know About Sex, and then some. Gene Wilder wants to have sex with the sheep. All right.
Yep. Itchitari. There's so much in that movie that's freaking the giant tit. There's just so much good in it. But it's funny, because when I first saw it, made me think about it right now, because we're talking about the rabbits as kind of the metaphor for a bunch of things within our society. But when I was looking at the rabbits and they're kind of jumping around together, I was like, I wonder if Yorgos is a huge Woody Allen fan, and he was like, I'm going to throw these rabbits in here, because the scene almost felt like that scene from, like, go and see if you can, I think it might even be in the trailer for Everything You Want to Know About Sex But Afraid to Ask, they have the rabbits in it. So, yeah, anyway.
That very well could be, I just remember, there's different stories that they're doing, aphrodisiacs work. Woody Allen plays a court jester who wants to give a love potion, but is foiled by a chastity belt. References to Shakespeare, Hamlet. And then I don't know for sure about the rabbits.
It's kind of around, if my memory serves me correctly, it's all about when they're the sperms inside the dick and balls.
Oh, what happens during ejaculation?
Yeah, because they have the rabbits are kind of like, just, it's kind of like the intro and extra, if that's a word, for the film. They have it kind of, the rabbits are there. So it's going to make me go, I'm going to go watch it when I get done here, just to go back and see that part. That's one of those ones that it's kind of like, is it politically incorrect?
No,
to still like Woody Allen's movies?
There's a lot of probably, controversial statements right there. there's a section out there called Are Transvestites Homosexuals? There's a section called What Are Sex Perverts? It's a parody of a game show, What's My Line? I still recommend watching it. It's not one of my favorite early Woody Allen films. That goes to like Sleeper or Bananas.
Yeah, totally. I would agree.
But the favorite, like I said before, is a new direction for Yorgos Lanthimos. I know we started to do comedy in The Lobster. That's where you get to see a different side. And he wasn't just doing just these dark stories. And then he made The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is very dark, but also weirdly funny. And then The Favorite, which is all comedy. I remember seeing the trailer for this and just the beginning line where Queen Anne goes, "Hey, we won the war." And Sarah goes, "Well, no, we got to keep fighting." "Oh, I did not know that we need to keep fighting." And the whole thing where, like, Queen Anne's like, "I heard them. They call me fat." And Leia Sarah goes, "I would only say that to you, your face, and I dare not call you fat." So just the dynamics. They all have this great comedy timings with each other. If you're a fan of Poor Things and you just saw that recently because all of the award, I'm sure you've seen The Favorite, because The Favorite was up for like 11 Oscar nominations. It won one for Olivia Colman. I know that Emma Stone was nominated as well as like Best Screenplay. So it was up for that. And I know it just won one for Olivia Colman. I was hoping that it would win for Best Original Screenplay, but it did not. I think it did win. I want to look this up right now. I think it did win in the Golden Globes for that. If I can see how quickly. Reception, did it say that? Internet worked for me. It did gross $34.4 million. It was the best film of 2018, beaten Suspiria for the box office. As you know, and doesn't tell me. I thought for sure it would say if it, how many Golden Globes. It just, no, it's too fast. Just no. All right, folks, I'm sorry. I'm not able to find exactly if this thing won a Golden Globe. That's my other rage right now, is that if I try to look something up, it wants to give me a whole bunch of other facts about the movie, and I just want to try and pull up IMDb. And when I try to pull IMDb, every time I open up a new page, it says, "Do you want to download the app?" And I try to open another page. "Do you want to download the app?" Like, no, I don't want to download the app. I just want you to just, yeah, I don't tell me to rate stuff. Just pull up the page. Like, every time I try to pull up a page, and then it just takes forever for the page to load up. I'm trying to find this shit on my phone. I know I should just look this up on my computer, but then, all right, I'm going to look this up right now. The Favorite, Oscar wins.
This one won Oscar, I think, for best performance by an actress, a leading role.
I know it's won that, but I thought for sure.
All the rest were just nominations. It's nominated for best original screenplay, nominated for best achievement in production design, nominee for best achievement in costume design, nominee best motion picture of the year, nominee best achievement in directing, best performance by an actress in supporting role, Rachel Weisz. Best performance in a supporting role, Emma Stone. Best achievement in cinematography. Best achievement in film editing. But it killed at the BAFTA Awards.
Oh, yeah. So went a lot there. So I know that this is the other time working with Robbie Ryan, who also shot Poor Things. This is the first time seeing like the different fisheye lenses that were in this. What are your takes on the cinematography from Robbie Ryan?
Yeah, no, I like it. You know, it's like I said, the cinematography is good, but to me, this isn't I didn't find this a cinematography film per se. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not a movie. It's not one I would look at and go, okay, like, this is what I would think of when I think of it. You know, there's shots in it that are cool, but to your point, if you can think of a movie to be as a play, then to me, the cinematography doesn't really mean a lot. Now, that's probably why maybe it didn't win, but because I think there was probably other things that came out that time where it's like, wow, that was brilliant. I did like the change up in some of the shooting style within it, and the fisheye lens didn't take away from the film for me. And I would say, you know, you talked a little bit earlier about it, but I don't think Yorgos has made a movie that isn't a comedy, in my opinion. Like, every single one of his movies are a comedy. It's just different levels of comedy. And because there's things in all of them that you just, like, you're going to laugh at. He has a way of telling a story that is dark and evil and still making you laugh.
But I think in The Favorite, it has much more of a wider appeal than his other movies. I mean, even The Lobster, because The Lobster was like this.
It's definitely the most mainstream, I would say, for sure.
Well, sure. I mean, because I know that The Lobster was his very first English language movie. I know that movie was funny, but it was only funny to me and certain people. Like, I would not be able to recommend The Lobster and The Killing of the Sacred Deer to, like, my parents. But this one I can have watched first. And if they like this,
yeah, well, that's one of those ones too, though, right? Like, if you're talking about him as a director, like, the fact that he is very popular right now, and like, when I saw Poor Things, I'm like, there's a lot of people that are not going to like this movie. Like, to me, sure. It's like, it's, I think people are going to see it and it's talked about, which is great. And to your point, I want people to see these kind of films because it stretches your mind and imagination and your vision of the world, and, you know, brings up discussion about true feminism and owning your own sexuality and things like that. Right. But, yeah, I would think of all of his films that The Favorite is probably the only one that I would consider somewhat mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, yeah, you know, there's things within it that mainstream audiences, like, if, I don't know your parents very well, but if I think of people that would be like in their 70s that are not film fans, but just, you know, people that want a story, there would possibly be things in The Favorite that would also offend them, like the lesbianism or, you know, things that, you know, people who are younger who have a broader vision of the world would potentially not, that wouldn't pass them by. So it makes it more mainstream for that type of audience. But I think that some of the people that are outright, or, you know, they would have problems with it. You know what I mean? But it's still his most mainstream film, for sure.
I think you'd probably be offended by this movie if you're expecting a movie that has a good character and a bad character, and this good character has to try to win over this bad character. If they're expecting a movie with a standard villain and a standard antagonist and a protagonist, then they might be feel off by having your feelings change. Like, people can change, all right? Your views about people can change as well. And I like movies that explore that and show the complexity of human beings and how our minds can grow and change. And, you know, one day you'll think that I, the host of Cinema Recall, knows exactly what I'm talking about. I'm very educated and astute. And a lot of times I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, and I'm just going to say them in a microphone. And a lot of times when I'm doing these shows, and I thank you for being here with me, Jim, like, my thoughts kind of go in random patterns and things zigzag. But I get back to my main point, and that's to say that this is a movie that you can watch without knowing any historical context or accuracies. Just know that you have a story about a woman who wants to overcome her stature in life, and your thoughts about her is going to change. And her antagonist, you're going to have different thoughts about them. The fun thing to do with this movie, Jim, is to watch it different times, and you choose which of these women is your main avatar. Is it going to be Queen Anne? You're going to watch it through her perspective? Are you going to watch it through Abigail's perspective? Are you going to watch it through Lady Sarah's perspective? And then you would get a different ending. It's like Clue, all right? Remember Clue when you saw it in theaters and there's like those different endings of Clue? You get this, but you don't need to see the three different endings because you'll get your different endings. Either you'll have a happy ending or a sad ending or maybe your angry ending, but whatever the case, you'll get a really great movie with three wonderful performances. I'm grateful that the Oscars did nominate each of them. That's another thing too about the Oscars. I don't care who wins. I just like knowing that these movies get mentioned and talked about. And that just makes me very happy. So this whole debate about, you know, Barbie didn't have nominations and whatnot. I'm like, look, Barbie's up for Best Picture, okay? Margot Robbie got her nomination for Best Producer. You can calm down a little bit, all right? It's the biggest movie ever.
Well, I think that's ultimately what made it. Like, it doesn't matter how many you're going to push me into a corner to bash the Oscars again.
I'm sorry, Jim, I'm not trying to do that.
No, I know, buddy. I'm just poking the bear. But you know, the real measurement for the movie is who made more money, and Barbie made way more money than Oppenheimer. So it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah. Like,
but, and ultimately, you know, it means something to these actors, obviously, because, you know, they, you know, get emotional when they win or whatever, but you know, ultimately they just want to keep working and making great stuff. And that's what I want to see, right? You know, and I'm going to somewhat disagree with you. I don't think it's got the Clue ending. I think the ending is very perfect. It takes you, like, even though you may be rooting for any one of those three people, at the end of it, you're just sad. You're sad for all of them. Because none of them really got what they want in life. Even Emma Stone's character, who she became the favorite, right? You can tell she's not 100% happy because, you know, the queen, she has the favorite. The last kind of line in the movie is kind of, yeah, rub my feet, bitch. You know, like it's kind of like she thinks she's her confidant and she's replaced Lady Sarah. And no, you're just good with your tongue and get on there and start rubbing my feet. Yeah, so it does bring that up. Like at the end of it, even if you're rooting for Emma Stone's character, you feel to yourself, you know, was your compromise worth it? Could you not have been maybe happier if you were still just Lady Sarah's assistant? You know what I mean? Like you could have still got a lot of things out of it. So maybe to your point, I think watching it through the different lenses of each one of the characters is a fun exercise, but I think it just brings us to the summation of the film that this film is funny as fuck in a lot of places, but it's going to leave you with sadness at the end. It's like, it's got bittersweet happiness because at the end of it, you're going to be like, you know what? I feel sorry for all those ladies.
Yeah, that's true. They never did get what they actually wanted. And even though Abigail may seem like she's upper points of society and she's like almost seen as like statesman-like quality, at the end of the day, she still has to rub feet and she still has to do like bad things that she doesn't want to do. She still starts off, begins as a whore and ends up as a whore. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing changes for her. Jim, we're getting to the end of our episode here, buddy. And I just wanted to say thank you ever, ever, ever so much for talking about The Favorite. Emma Stone, just one of my favorite actors of all time. I loved her in every movie I've seen her in. She was not mesmerizing on the Film Rage podcast, which is cool. They gave the power to Olivia Colman. Respectfully deserves that. Disagree somewhat on that because I still think Emma Stone is great. Loved her ever since I saw, I was going to say School of Rock. But no, Superbad. Loved her in Superbad. Loved her
She is undoubted, though, buddy. She's undoubted. Which is way more difficult for an actor to be. That's like almost impossible. So she's picking roles that the movies are great.
Yes.
Like even Olivia Colman, in my opinion, who's a better actor and has more range than Emma Stone. I still love them both.
Yeah.
But Olivia Colman has been in some movies that have been stinkers. The last 8 films from Emma Stone are not stinkers. They're all great films. So
I have an idea for a movie, and I want to share this with you right now. I want Emma Stone and Margot Robbie to be in a movie together. I want Emma Stone's character of Bella Baxter and Margot Robbie's character of Barbie to be in a movie together.
And it would be like a road movie?
Bella beats Barbie. Yes, it'd be almost like a remake of Thelma and Louise. Barbie and Bella.
Barbie.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to watch it because I'm a huge Emma Stone fan, and she doesn't pick bad movies, so it's going to be good, buddy. She says she'll be in it. It'll be great.
You get the same person that made Cruella to help, you know, write it or something, and Yorgos Lanthimos to direct it. Yes. You know, put those binds together.
Yeah.
Make it work.
Just tag Yorgos on this post, buddy, and get him, send the clip to his private email.
That's right, because I'm very close with them right now. I still know everything.
Tight.
Before we do go, Jim, please tell everyone out there what's going on with the Film Rage podcast. Tell us where we can find you, everything like that.
Yeah, I'm on. You can find us on our website, which is filmrageyyc.com. You can find email us at filmragecalgary@gmail.com. You can find us on pretty much all the socials at FilmRageYYC. And we've been having some unusual episodes of late because just of some absenteeism and stuff, us traveling, some of us on business and personal lives. So we're back to our regular schedule coming up here in March again. So we're going to have the list back. We're going to have Rage or Dare back. We got The Amazing Merman Predicts is still there. Yes. And bringing the joy. So yeah, we're back to our old habits. Casey, the nerdy photographer, the god of rage, is back, which is most exciting. The most generous and beautiful man on the planet.
Well,
with you a close second, Laverne.
I want to say this, buddy. When you ever have an episode where the merman or Bryce can't be on there, I would love to fill in. Just put that out there.
All right. You know what? There's a big ask. Like a lot of people go, you know, we'd like to be on your podcast, and we'd be like, okay, so you have to see these movies, you have to do this, you have to do that, and then by the time they get to the fourth or fifth thing, they're kind of like, man, I can't commit that in a week because we really push it. But you know, we want to have you come on and do a mini episode with us, which okay. I think you've been trying to get us. I've been poking you to say, hey, let's do it, man, and you keep going, I've got a movie, but I'm not going to tell you.
I say that I've got a movie.
Yeah, you gotta have one so we can come on and
watch. Oh God! Okay, all right. Well, I have to find one that it can be one that you've seen before or reviewed before or what?
Yeah, it can't be one we've reviewed before, and it has to have played in a movie theater because that's
in a movie theater.
We're all about that. It could have been just, you know, like one movie theater in Thailand or perhaps in, you know, in Reykjavik, just one time. As long as it's got a box office number. We consider it a real movie. If it hasn't, it wasn't a real movie. It was just someone made it for TV and it just happened to be showing somewhere.
All right. Well, we're recording this on a Thursday, so you're going to have to give me till like end of next week. I'll think of something.
This is not going to get, the movie's been out for 5 years, so no worries.
Okay. That's fair. Again, Jim, thank you so much. As for Cinema Recall, you can find all of our episodes on a plethora of podcast platforms, like I mentioned before. If you're a Patreon member, you are going to get this episode earlier than everyone else, patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. This is part of the show where I read thank yous to all of our Patreon members. Again, thank you so much to each of these individuals for giving us money so we can continue on doing the show. So no special order. I want to thank Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcast. Thank you very much, Jason. I want to thank Donnie Roberts from the Deep Sea Anthologies. Donnie and I recently recorded an episode on JFK exclusively for Patreon subscribers, so definitely check that out. I also want to thank Linda Castro from Bed Knobs and Broomflits. I want to thank Matt and Ashley from Mashley at the Movies. Thank you very much. I want to thank Jeanette Mickenham from AKA Jeanette. Thank you very much, Jeanette. I want to thank Jen McQuaid from Shocked and Applaud. Thank you very much, Jen. And lastly, Harvey Andrus. He doesn't have a website, but he likes to give us money, so he's a friend. Thank you, Harvey. Appreciate the support. If you want to be like these awesome people and get shout outs, please go to patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. There are three tiers. There's a $3 tier, a $5 tier, and a $10 tier. $5 tier members can choose any movie they want us to review, and we will do so. Doesn't matter what it is, we'll do it. $10 Patreon members have a chance to choose any topic they want and be on the show. So, but it has to be in the entertainment field, all right? Can't be talking about like politics or sets. Well, I may allow for the sets thing, all right? But maybe not politics, all right? So, yes, I want to try to get more sets actors involved in our podcast. Only had one adult film star on our podcast. I want to try and book more. So, oh, speaking about sets, I should mention that every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. on Full Swap Radio, you can find us for their Vanilla Sunday program. Full Swap Radio is a kink and fetish podcast network, and a whole bunch of different podcasts from kinksters and fetish artists and adult stars and, you know, strippers, dominatrix, everything you want in your kink life. Check that out. We're available on the Sunday program in Vanilla Sundays, so check us out there as well. Thank you to Jim for being here. It's not easy to be on the show because my mind rambles and rants and goes in different directions right there. If you went into my mind, Jim, the things you would see, all right, that whole being John Malkovich, being the Vern, it would be a whole...
Did you know that that's my dream in life, is to be the Vern? So, you know what? Like, I'm all over it, man. I just find, you know what? You have a great vision about what film means to you. And that's one of the reasons I love you so much, man. Because, you know, I think there's too many people that travel through the world that just float through it. Whereas you like to absorb stuff. You take that. What's that line? You take joy in the little things, buddy. Just like in Zombieland.
I do. And I love the Film Rage podcast. I get all my new movie reviews from you, Bryce, and Murray. And I listen to your episodes of Lisa Frankenstein, and I'm still going to see it because I want to have my own different thoughts about it as well. So, be fun times.
We all three of us had a different thought on it. So,
I think I'll be raging and mad and be happy about that too. So, we'll see. But anyways, folks, thank you so much for listening to Cinema Recall. Thank you to my guest here, Jim. And we'll see you again soon.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.